All right, so we're learning Perek Yutes of Sefer Shoftim, and we ended off last week with Pasuk Chaf Dalet. So just to briefly review what's going on here before we basically conclude the Perek. So we know this this Levi who was traveling with his Pilegesh and with this and with you know his servant. So they were traveling from her father's house. And they left. We learned that they left a little bit late. They left in the middle of the day. They didn't leave in the beginning of the day. They weren't going to make it home before sundown. So they had to sleep over somewhere. They passed by a non-Jewish city. The Levi didn't want to go into the non-Jewish city. And they ended up in the city of Giva, which is a city in Binyamin. They came to the city. They parked themselves on the street. Nobody offered them a place to sleep. And finally, an older man... the Pasuk says he wasn't actually from Binyamin, he was really from the mountains of Ephraim. He was just working in the area of Binyamin. He had maybe some sort of an apartment there or something. So he came by and he said, you know, what's doing? Who are you? Where are you coming from? Where are you going? So he said, this man was a Levi, also from the mountains of Ephraim. And he said, I'm just passing through. Nobody's really offered me a place to stay. So he invites him in. And as we learned... soon after he invites him in, the Pasuk says in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Beis, that these people surrounded the house, right? A group of people, Anshei Ha'ir, Anshei B'nei V'lial, these people that were up to no good, they surrounded the house and they're banging on the door and they say to the older man who was the Balabayas, bring out this guest of yours. Bring out this guest of yours, and we'd like to engage in homosexual relations with him, as we learned last week. And the man says, listen, don't do anything wrong to him. He's just passing through. I invited him in. It would be a terrible thing. So then we said, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, which was the last pasuk that we read. He says, Hinei v'itia besula ufilag shehu otziana osam ve'anu osam. So he says, I have my daughter, right, who's a besula, she's never been with a man, u'pilag sheu, and I have this man's pilegesh, I'll bring them out, and you can do as you please with them. V'asu lohem atov be'enechem, v'lo ish hazeh lo sa'asu devar ha'nevala hazos, but please don't do this terrible thing to this man. Very difficult to understand this. The interpretation that I shared last week from Rabbi Yitzchak Kirzner is that this was a situation that wasn't going to end well. This was essentially a crazed mob, right, of people, and they were going to do something, right? They weren't going to just be convinced to go on their merry way without their desire satisfied. So they were going to do something. What they were asking for was to sleep with this man, which is homosexuality. That's what they wanted. That's what they were asking for. So this fellow felt that, listen, they're going to do something. So either they're going to have their way with him, or they're going to have their way with these women, right? My daughter and the Pilegesh. And he thought that of the two evils, they're both terrible, and nobody wants either one of them to happen. But of the two, this is a lesser sin, right? Sleeping with the women is a lesser sin. They're unmarried women, right? The Basula obviously is an unmarried woman, and the Pilegesh is, somehow connected to him, but we said, most understand that Pilegesh is not really married. It's a concubine. So, unmarried women versus homosexuality, this is the lesser of the two sins. So if they're going to do something terrible, which, again, either way, right? Neither one of these options is something that we want to happen, and this is okay, and this person didn't want either one to happen, but he felt that of the two, this would be lesser. This would be a lesser sin, and that's why he offered that to them, with the hope that maybe they would take him up on it and not abuse this man who came to him. The pasuk says pasuk chaf hey, and then we'll come back to discussing in a minute. So pasuk chaf hey. So they did not listen to him. They weren't interested. And they said, no, nothing doing, right? That's not what we want. No, we want him. That's what we want. We want homosexual relations. That's what we want. We're not interested in these girls. So now the Levi realizes, you know, his life is on the line here. You know, they're going to take him, they're going to abuse him, he doesn't know what's going to happen. He's going to survive, not going to survive, he doesn't know what's going to happen to him. So he takes the Pilegesh, and Vayotze Aleihem Hachutz, and he pushes her out, he pushes her outside, Vayedu Osa, and then they take her and they abuse her, Vayis Aluluba. The Mefarshim say that the two languages, Vayedu Osa means they rape her, and then Vayis Aluluba Osa, means like all sorts of different terrible things that they do to her. Kol halayla ad haboker, the whole night until the morning. Vayishalchuha kaalos hashachar, and they sent her, and then they sent her back, you know, in the morning. Terrible, terrible, you know, pasuk. Again, very, very difficult to understand what's going on here. Presumably, this guy was afraid for his life. Right? Presumably, he was afraid for his life. He was certainly afraid that they were going to, they were going to engage in relations with him. And maybe he was even afraid that for his life that maybe they would kill him afterwards. So again, it's possible that he's making the same cheshbon that of the two, if they're going to do something, maybe they'll be appeased, you know, with the Pilegesh, and they can have relations with her again. That's a little bit more the natural way. She's an unmarried woman. It's not as terrible, it's not as bad as with me. And therefore, maybe that's why he pushes her out. All the Mefarshim say she didn't want to go. This is not something, obviously, she wanted to be involved in. But he kind of, you know, forced her out, you know, to save his own life. Again, it's a difficult thing to understand, but presumably this was the cheshbon of both the Zakein, who made the offer of his daughter and the Pilegesh, and then this man, who eventually made the decision to push the Pilegesh out to save his own life, or to save his own, you know, his own morality. So presumably this was the cheshbon that they felt that, you know, something terrible is going to happen here. So of the two terrible things, which is less terrible? That seems to be the cheshbon. Yeah.
Stop me if I'm getting ahead of you, but is that halachically okay?
Yeah. You're not getting ahead of me. I wasn't planning to analyze this from a halachic standpoint. I don't know.
If I'm in a situation where it's either me getting killed,
right,
or there's that guy next to me getting killed.
Right.
I'm supposed to push him in front of me.
Okay, so getting killed is different, right? Getting killed is different. So, you know, we don't have the right. I mean, even, you know, we know that, right? The Gemara clearly says, and this is how we hold, that if someone puts a gun to my head and says, you know, either kill Ploni or I'll kill you, we don't have the right to do that, right? We don't have the right to take someone else's life. The Gemara says, who says his blood, you know, who says your blood is redder than his blood, right? So you don't have the right to take someone else's life. So certainly you can't do something active, you know, to put that person in danger and save your own life. But again, that's murder. Murder is a little bit different. Gilui Arayos is on the same level as murder. It's one of the big three, the Gilui Arayos. But again, here the question is, you know, these men sleeping with a Pilegesh is likely not Gilui Arayos. She's an unmarried woman. In Chas V'Shalom, no one's saying that this was right. Right? No one's saying that this is a good thing, that this is right, that this is condoned. Chas V'Shalom, this is terrible. This is a travesty, a tragedy. You know, essentially they're raping her, they're abusing her. This is not consensual. You know, but that avera of sleeping with an unmarried woman, or with a woman in this case who's a concubine, where maybe she was connected to him, you know, she had an ongoing relationship with him, but she wasn't really married b'chuppah v'kiddushin with him, it's not Giloy Arayos. It doesn't reach that threshold of Giloy Arayos, so it's not as terrible. You know, and again, Mishkav Zachar, you know, is essentially Giloy Arayos, right? That is in the Parsha of Arayos, and it is a Toeva. So that's what the Zakein and this Levi are making this calculation, that of the, you know, if the mob is going to do one of these two things, you know, because they're going to do something, they're a crazed mob, they're going to do something, so of the two terrible things, this one is less terrible. And maybe if this will appease them, you know, this will get them away, let them do that and let them get out of here and save me, so to speak. Again, you know, it doesn't make this so palatable, but it makes it a little bit easier to understand. You know, again, it seems to be a terrible thing that this guy is saving his own life by pushing this girl out to get abused. You know, which when you say it like that, well, you know, that's a terrible thing. You know, why push her out? You know, but again, if you make this kind of calculation, I'm not saying it makes it great, but it you know might soften it a little bit. Yeah, it's a difficult parsha. you know, halachically, I don't know exactly if this was right. The Mefarshim don't say, you know, yes or no. But if there's a, you know, I don't know, if someone would ask a shaila, you know, if you have a mob that's coming to get you, you know, and this is what they want to do to you, and you have an option, either let them do it or, you know, push out a girl and let them have their way with, you know, al pi halacha. I don't know. Not sure. You know, Baruch Hashem, these are not real halacha lemaisa shailas. But this did happen, this incident. Okay. Now, it's interesting. The pasuk says, at first, v'lo avu ha'anashim lishmo alo. Right? The old man in pasuk Chaf Dalet offered his daughter and the Pilegesh. He said, don't touch this guy, right? But I'll give you my daughter and the Pilegesh. Pasuk says, v'lo avu ha'anashim lishmo alo. They weren't interested, right? No deal. They weren't interested in that offer. Then, once the man pushes the Pilegesh out, so then they go along with it. Right? That's clear in the pasuk. Then they go along with it. So the Baal Shem Tov says that originally they weren't interested because the man offered his daughter and they were, you know, as a crazed mob as they were, but they were still, they didn't want to, they were afraid of the old man's kavod. They really wanted to have their way with this guest, the Levi. Right? The old man, presumably he was a resident, you know, he lived there, people knew him. So for him, they didn't want to, you know, like, you know, we don't want your daughter. We're not interested in that. You know, so that seems to be v'lo avu lishmo alo. Once the Pilegesh came out, so then, you know, they changed their tune. So some of the Mefarshim say that, that again, at first, they didn't even want her. You know, they were solely focused on homosexual relations. That's all they wanted. Once they saw her, so then she was very beautiful, and then, you know, they got excited by that, and then they went on to abuse her. The Malbim points out that you see clearly that this whole thing was purely taiva driven. Right? This is purely taiva driven. It's all desire. It's all lust. So at first they had a desire and they were lustful for him, you know, for the homosexuality. And then once they saw her, their desire shifted. And then they said, oh, you know what? We'll do that. And the whole thing was based on desire and lust. And she just became the next target. I mean, it's just a matter of who was the target at the moment of their lust and their desire. But you see clearly this was very desire-driven. Now that's very important because we mentioned last week that if you look at this story, it's uncanny how it almost exactly mirrors the story of Lot and the two Malachim. Almost exactly. Almost identical. I even printed out the psukim here. You know, you match up the psukim, it's uncanny. It's like almost word for word, you know, the psukim. You know, the men come and they surround the house and they want the two malachim. And then Lot comes out and he says, I'll give you my two daughters. And they say, no. Of course, the ending is different because when it comes to Lot, the malachim just open the door and blind everyone, right? So that, and they pull Lot back in. So that the ending is very different. This was a much more tragic ending. But at least up until that point, there's an uncanny similarity. Now, some of the Mefarshim, yeah.
Why did he offer both his daughter and the Pilegesh? Why didn't he first offer the Pilegesh, and if they had rejected that, then he could have offered his daughter also, so it would have been like two for the price of one.
So meaning you would try to cut your losses.
Right.
Why did he offer both? That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I did see somewhere. I'm trying to look at my notes now, and I don't remember where I saw it. I did see somewhere that that he didn't really think they would go for his daughter. Now, he was kind of like throwing that in, but he didn't really think they would be interested in that.
She was that unstrong.
I don't know exactly. Maybe I don't know. Maybe.
If the mom said that they didn't want to abuse him because he was a resident
right.
of the town, so maybe that thinking would extend to the daughter.
That could be. Maybe he realized that, listen, you know, they might have some respect for me, so he kind of just threw his daughter in there. Really, it was the Pilegesh that he was offering. Now, why did he throw the daughter even in B'chalal? I don't know. It's interesting. The Al-Sheikh has an interesting take on this. He says, you know, what got the man to push his daughter, to push his Pilegesh out? So he says that the Levi saw the old man offer his daughter. And he said, well, if the old guy is willing to offer his own daughter to protect me, right, the least I can do is offer my concubine. Right? And you see, you know, he was even willing to offer his own daughter.
It's not the same Levi that we had.
No. Different Levi.
I missed last week, so.
Yeah, different Levi.
Catch up on the storyline.
Yeah. Different Levi.
I don't want to jump ahead, but you mentioned the dimension of Loki's.
Yeah.
Is maybe what happened in the end with Lot a justification what happens later on with Sheva Binyamin?
What do you mean? Meaning?
I mean, later on what's going to happen against Sheva Binyamin.
Right.
Because of this.
Right.
What happened with Lot in that situation in the town he was in.
Right.
Is that maybe a justification for what the actions against Sheva Binyamin were?
Meaning that they were justified in going to war with Binyamin
right.
because of what they did. Okay. I mean, to an extent, yes. We'll see that. We'll see if we have time to start that tonight. But we'll see that essentially, yes. But there's one major difference. And the major difference is that when it comes to Sodom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes Sodom. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't punish the people of Giva. He leaves it up to Klal Yisrael, who, you know, they do eventually go to war with Binyamin and the people of Giva. But when it comes to Sodom, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's a terrible city, they're doing terrible things, and I'm going to wipe out the whole city. Right? Now, it wasn't that the destruction of Sodom was not in response to this one incident of Lot and the Malachim, that's true. But still, it seems to be that this was indicative of how the city ran. Right? This was what these were the things that went on in the city. So, I heard this, you know, this Rabbi Yitzchak Kirzner, so he mentioned that one interesting difference that we see between the story of Lot and this story is that when it comes to the city of Lot, the city of Sodom, I'm sorry, listen to the language. Who comes and approaches the house? Anshe ha'ir, anshe Sodom. And now here, what does the pasuk say? The pasuk says, anshe ha'ir, anshe Belial. Right? Anshe ha'ir, anshe Belial. So he understands that when it comes to Sodom, this was the whole city. And if you read the rest of the pasuk, it's clear by Sodom. Right? It was Anshe Yanshe Sodom, Nasab Levi's, Minar Ve'ad Zakein Kol Ha'am Mikatzeh. From young to old, the entire nation, everyone, the whole city, came to this house. Right? When it comes to the story here, it's clearly not the whole city. It's not the whole city of Giv.
Well, but the city didn't react.
Correct. And that's why they're held responsible at the end. Right? But the whole city did not come out to the house. So he explains, and it's based on a Ramban. There's a Ramban in Parshas Vayera, you know, by the story of Sodom, who actually, the Ramban contrasts the story of Sodom with the story of Pilagesh Begiva. And the Ramban says that there was a major difference between these two stories. When it came to Sodom, why was it that the whole city came out? Because this was their approach. Their laws, their approach was no guests, no chesed. We're not interested. How is that manifested? Any guest that comes in, we're going to rape and abuse them, and we're going to steal their money. Right? But that was just like, you know, that was just the how-to.
Policy.
That was the how-to. That was how they were going to get rid of the guests. But the policy was no guests, no chesed. That was their policy. This was like in the city's bylaws. No guests, no. And, you know, the abuse was kind of just a byproduct. That was just how they went about getting rid of the guests. But the law was really the no guests. You know, so when it came here, this was again just lust-driven. This wasn't the whole city. This wasn't like give us policy, no guests, you know, get rid of the guests. That's not the case. Even though we do find in the beginning that they had a hard time finding a place to stay. But we don't find that this was like in the bylaws or in the constitution of the city that they weren't allowed to have guests. This was a group of people, Anshe Ha'ir, Anshe Belial. It was a group of people who were up to no good, who were driven by their lust, and they came and they were a crazed mob and they wanted to do something terrible. But it wasn't the whole city because it wasn't a city policy, it wasn't a city law. So says the Ramban, Rabbi Kirzner elaborates a little bit on it, but says the Ramban that when it comes to Sodom, this was a chait of seichel. This was a perverted way of thinking. The whole approach was off. The whole approach was perverted. Right? Of course, what they wanted to do was terrible, but it was much more deeply rooted than that. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I have to destroy Sodom. Because the whole city is warped. Their way of thinking is warped. Their laws and their policies are warped. Right? The whole system of values and morals is warped. Everything is off base when it comes to Sodom. So that's why I have to destroy it. It wasn't just a city full of lust. Of course, they also did lustful things. But that wasn't the main problem. The main problem was much more deeply rooted. When it came to Giva was a fine city. There was not... It wasn't a great city, right? They didn't handle this well. But at the end of the day, it was not a city that had policies and laws that were perverted and that were warped. This was a group of people who did something terrible, who were driven by their lust. They did something terrible. The city did not handle it properly. That's 100% true, and that's why they held responsible for it. But at the end of the day, it wasn't something as deeply rooted as it was by Sodom.
Sounds like it's not the extreme, but the city wasn't that different. They didn't welcome them in.
Right.
When they went in, there was a mob who sounds like they weren't worried about getting into trouble for doing what they were
doing.
And in fact, they didn't from the city.
Right. Yeah. No, 100%.
That different.
100%, but we have to draw some sort of distinction, because otherwise, says the Ramban, why was it that Sodom was destroyed? Gofris va'esh, you know, you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending Malachim to turn the whole city upside down, and here you don't find that. You know, why didn't Hashem do the same thing with Giva? You don't find that. You know, so again, so that's how he draws the distinction between these two chatoim. Not to say that Giva was great. You know, I said they were fine. They weren't really fine. Not to say they were great. They weren't a good city. But it wasn't as deeply rooted. The problems were not as deeply rooted as they were by Sodom. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, we're going to take care of it in another way, which was, you know, through Klal Yisrael. Okay. There's another approach, a similar approach, actually. The Akedas Yitzchak. So I just bought a new sefer. Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky, who I've quoted in the shul before, he's a Rosh Yeshiva in Silver Spring. So he wrote a sefer on Navi, where he quotes, not on every pasuk, but on different psukim, he quotes, you know, different Maror Makomos throughout, you know, Tanakh and Machshava and Musar that discuss those psukim in Navi. So this is a sefer on Nevi'im Rishonim. So in this pasuk, he brings an Akedas Yitzchak. The Akedas Yitzchak was a Spanish... Rishon, late Rishon in the 1400s. He actually was exiled from Spain in 1492 with the expulsion. So the Akedas Yitzchak also writes about this. He lived much later than the Ramban, obviously a few hundred years later. But he wrote about this distinction, and he essentially echoes a little bit of what the Ramban says, but he says something so important, which is really why in the end Giva and Shevet Binyamin were held responsible. And he says... And I'll just read you the I just took a couple lines out here. He writes that anytime you have yechidim, individuals, in a group that sin, that do something wrong, one of the Isurim in the Torah, and he says, Shehelem ein hashoftim v'hamanhigim, and the judges and the leaders of that generation hide their eye from it. They turn the other way. They ignore it. Right? This is going on your point. Matirosam ki'ilu heim mutarim min adin. When you have the leaders, when you have the shoftim, the judges and the rabbis, turn the other way. Right? Turn their eye. Look the other way. And don't focus on these problems. So what happens? It's like a tacit approval. It's like they're giving an approval to what's being done. That the chatoim are okay. That the things are not so bad. And he says, "Hachet hakatan." When you have a small sin, kishiyaskimu alav das harabim. When the masses are okay with it, you have a small sin, a small group of people that's sinning something small. The masses are okay with it. The hadas nitna bebati dineim shelodim chosbo, and the psak comes down from the base then. Don't stop these people. Don't do anything about it. Don't respond. Hinehu zima veavon plili vechatas hakahol kulo. He says it becomes transformed from an individual sin to a communal sin. When the community doesn't respond, it becomes a communal sin, which is such an important perspective. And he talks about certain things that were going on in the 1400s. you know, in different communities in Spain. And he says, you know, there were things, and I made a stink about it. And meanwhile, the rabbis of the community are not doing anything. And he says it's a terrible thing. If they don't do anything, it's their sin also. It's their sin also. You have the sins of the Yechidim. If they're not responded to by the leaders, by the rabbis, it becomes a communal sin. And that's why eventually, that's why says the Akedas Yitzchak, that since in Giva, even though it's true it was only one crazed mob that was lust-driven and did whatever they did, but since the city didn't respond, since the manhigim, the leaders of the city, the based in the rabbanim of the city, it was a Jewish city, it was a Giva, it was Binyamin, right? Nobody responded to it, nobody took these people to task, nobody punished them, so it became a sin of the entire city. And we'll see, you know, that lack of response actually gets worse as time goes on. Yeah.
The idea and concept of Egla Rufa is similar. The elders of the town have to come out. The town's leaders are taking the responsibility for.
Very good. Very good. Right? It's on us. It's on us. Right? I mean, you know, Lahavdil. I mean, you find these things even in, like, you know, in the business world, things go wrong in a company. Right? Heads begin to roll. Whose heads roll? The CEO. Right? If something goes wrong, you know, that's it. He's going to resign. It's only a matter of time before the CEO resigns or gets fired or something like that. Because if you're at the top, you need to take responsibility, whether you did it or not. Right? Even if you weren't directly involved in it. But if you're at the top, it's your responsibility. It's your achrayus. So that's exactly the point. Very good. Okay. So let's look at Pasuk Chavav. Terrible, terrible. Right? So after this whole night of abuse, this woman comes back. Latavo ha'isha lifnos ha'boker. So she comes back, you know, back to the house. Vatipol Pesach Beis Ha'ish. A painful pasuk just to read. Vatipol Pesach Beis Ha'ish. And she falls down on the floor at the entrance to the home. Asher Adonai Hasham, where her husband, you know, master, she's a pilegesh, not quite a husband, but where he's staying. Ad Ha'or, until daylight. You know, she fell. The Mitzvah Sama says she was weak. You know, after being abused the whole night, she was physically, she was weak. Pasuk of Zion, Vayakom Adoneha Baboker. So he gets up in the morning. Vayiftach Dalsos Habayis Vayetzi Laleches Ladarko. So, you know, he wants to go back. So he opens the door. He wants to go home already. He had a terrible incident the night before. Vineha Isha Pilagsho Nofeles Pesach Habayis. And he sees, you know, the Pilagish is lying there. The Adeha Alasaf, her hands are outstretched on the threshold of the house. Vayomer Eleha Kumi Vinelecha. Now the Psukim are missing the emotion here. I'm sure the guy was broken. Right? The Psukim don't discuss the emotion of what he was feeling and what he was going through. I'm sure he was traumatized, I'm sure he was broken. But the Psukim just mentioned the actual storyline of what happened. Vayomer Eleha.
He gets up like nothing happened. He didn't sleep. Who could sleep knowing that his pilegish was presumably
I understand. I understand. I understand. I don't think. I'm sorry.
He was the one who put.
I understand, but I don't. I really don't think. I know the psukim. You know, again, the psukim are missing the emotional context here. The psukim don't say. You know, I mean, a lot of times the psukim are missing the emotional context. I don't think Vayakom Adonai Baboker means that, you know, he pushed her out and he went to get a coffee and he went to put, you know, watch some TV. I think the guy probably had a terrible sleepless night and he was probably traumatized by what happened. In the morning, he probably wanted to get out of the city. Right? Vayakom Adonai Baboker, he may not have slept the whole night due to the trauma and he was worried about her. But again, there was nothing he could do because he knew that if he went out of the door at night, the mob would get him. Right? So he locked himself in the house, he barricaded himself, and the morning came, he said, I want to get out of here. I want to get out of the city. I think that's really what it means. Right, Vayomar Elah Kumi Venelecha. So he thinks she's still alive. This is also part of the, you know, this the sadness here. He thinks she's still alive, and he says, "Come on, let's go. Let's get out of here." Right, meaning he's going to take her. He's going to take her out. Ve'ein Ona. Right, she doesn't respond. And the Mefarshim say, "That's what the stuff it says." He sees that she's dead. You know, he thought she was alive still, and he sees she's dead. Vayikachea Alachamor. So he picks her up. He picks her body up. He places her on the donkey. And he leaves. He takes the body with him, and he leaves. Okay, pasuk kaf tes. So here we have the graphic part. Vayavo el beso. So he comes home, right, with the body of the pilegish. She comes home, And again, there's zero emotional context here, right? It's to the psukim are just listen. This is like a proof, you know, because obviously this was a terribly emotional a time for him, as you see, based on what he did, how he responded, he obviously was traumatized and distraught. But the psukim don't say that. The psukim just are talking about the action. They leave out the emotion. The emotion is, I guess, for us to understand. So he comes home and he takes out the knife. He takes hold of the pilagesh. And he cuts up the body into 12 pieces. She was dead. She was dead. Vayishalcheha b'chol gvul Yisrael. And he sends a piece out to, he sends her body out to throughout the entire country, right? Presumably one piece per shevet. He didn't, the Mefarshim say he didn't send to Binyamin, right? He didn't send to Binyamin because Binyamin didn't need the message that he was going to, that he was trying to say. What was he doing here with this? So, you know, he was clearly very distraught. For anyone to do this, you know, he was clearly very distraught, this person. We also know, by the way, if you remember all the way from the beginning of the Perek, we know that this was a person who had a temper. Right? That was the way that she, right, we learned originally that she left the house. Right? Why did she leave? Because of all the anger and attention in the house. He was an angry person. So here, this is his response out of anger based on what happened. He couldn't do anything to the people of the city because he wasn't strong enough. He was one person against this crazy mob. He couldn't do anything. But he says, now I'm going to get my revenge. And this is his response, and he does this. The Al-Sheikh says this was meant to shake people up. He wanted to shake people up. He said this is the fact that this could happen is a travesty, is a terrible thing, and Klal Yisrael needs to be shaken up. If this type of thing happens here, Klal Yisrael needs to be shaken up, and he felt this would be the scariest way to shake people up when they receive this. The Malbim says that he must have also sent the story. So probably he sent them, you know, with Shulchim, there was no FedEx. You know, he probably sent a shaliach with each piece to deliver it to the heads of each shevet, and probably to tell the story about what happened, and this is the result. Look, this is the result of what happened. What's the symbolism here? So the Malbim says that there was a lot of symbolism in what he did here. Number one, the Malbim says that all of the limbs are part of one body. So his message to them was that just like all of these limbs are part of one body, every single shevet in Klal Yisrael is not independent, is part of one body, is part of one unit called Klal Yisrael. That was message number one. Message number two, says the Malbim, that just like in a body, you can't have a brain, you can't have an active brain, you can't have a life force if all of the body parts are not together, right? Here you have chopped up body parts, you have body parts all over the place, you can't have a brain. The brain is not going to be alive. The life force is not going to be in this body. So too, he said that when you have disunity in Klal Yisrael, when you have this shevet doing this thing, and that shevet doing another thing, and every shevet doing its own thing, that's like the body parts all over the place. You can't have a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Seichel representing a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you can't have a Kadosh Baruch Hu Shechina among Klal Yisrael when Klal Yisrael is like that, dispersed, everyone doing their own thing. That's number two. Number three, says the Malbim, that just like when you have one limb that's diseased, that chas v'shalom, there's something wrong with it, you have two options. You either heal the limb or you cut it off. Either you heal the limb or you cut it off to save the body. So he says that there's a problem with one of the shvatim here. There's a problem with Shevet Binyamin. There's a disease, a spiritual disease in Shevet Binyamin if this type of thing can happen. And therefore, Klal Yisrael, you're the rest of the body, you have to make a decision. You either have to heal that shevet that's diseased, get them to do tshuva, get them to fix their ways, or you have to amputate, or you have to cut them out, because they're diseased and they're going to affect the rest of the body. So says the Malbim, these were the three ideas that he was sharing with Klal Yisrael, again, in his moments of trauma and anger following this incident. This was the message that he was sending.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to mutilate a dead body.
Correct. 100% correct.
How do you justify that?
So again, I don't know if he asked a shiloh here. You know what I mean? I don't think he asked his rav, you know, is this okay? This was out of anger and trauma that he was doing this. And maybe according to halacha, this was an improper thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, again, this was just his emotion. You know, his emotions took hold of him, and he said, "I need to send them a message in the strongest way possible, and this is the strongest way I can think of." So again, we're not condoning necessarily doing. You know, no one would ever say, no Rav would ever say, yeah, this is a good idea to send a message, right? But at the same time, he didn't ask a question. This was just what he did, and now you know. But this is the idea behind it, and what he was trying to communicate. Okay, Pasuk Lamed, the Hayachol Haroe, the Omar Lo Nihiyasa. So people saw this, and people were blown away, right? In a bad way, they were dumbfounded, and they said, "This kind of thing never happened here. It's never happened in Klal Yisrael. This type of thing never happened. We never seen anything like this from the time that we came out of Mitzrayim until today, right? Decades and decades. I mean, you're talking about 40 years in the Midbar." Kibush and Chiluk in Eretz Yisrael, the 14 years of conquering Eretz Yisrael, of dividing Eretz Yisrael, right? That's where we're at now. We're decades past, you know, past the Yetzias Mitzrayim. And they said, we've never seen anything like this. We've never seen anything so terrible like this. Simulachem aleha utzu v'daveru. And Klal Yisrael said, we have to figure out what to do about this. We need to respond. That's what they said. The Al-Sheikh says, interestingly, he says here that they're not saying that we need to investigate the matter. Because, says the Al-Sheikh, the details of the story here didn't really matter. There was obviously something so terrible, right? There's obviously something so terrible that we need to respond to it. And what the details were and how they played out is not really so important. Because when something so terrible happens, you know, the details almost get swallowed up. You don't really need to know the details. We know a travesty happened. We know something terrible happened, and therefore we need to respond. And this is crucial, because as we'll see, or as we saw already, and we'll continue to see at the beginning of the next perek, Binyamin doesn't respond, right? Giva, they don't respond. Nobody in Giva or in Binyamin responds to the Anshei B'nei Belial who carried out this terrible thing. But Klal Yisrael, the rest of Klal Yisrael says, you know, they presumably they got the messages that he was sending, that this, you know, Ish Levi was sending, and they said, this is a terrible thing. We can't allow this to go on. We can't allow this type of thing to happen in Klal Yisrael and go, you know, and just go on without a response. We need to respond in a concrete way. So let's get together and let's figure out what we're going to do.
Are they blaming the Levi?
No, they're not blaming the Levi. He didn't do anything wrong. Right, he didn't do anything wrong. I mean, we'll see. I mean, you know, they're not jumping to conclusions. We'll see at the beginning of the parak. We're going to stop here for tonight, but we'll see at the beginning of parak chaf, you know, that they do a little bit of research, you know, to find out a little bit more. But they're not blaming him. He didn't do anything wrong. But they are going to blame, obviously, the perpetrators of the crime. They're going to blame, and then they're also going to blame the rest of Giva and Binyamin for not taking these people to task and not punishing them for what they did.
The implication is if the city of Giron or Binyamin actually did something, it could have prevented...
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see at the beginning of next week. Yes, 100%. It's clear in the Mefarshim that their response is partially because the people of Giron and Binyamin did not respond. And had they responded and had they punished the people who did this, then the rest of Klal Yisrael would have been, okay, you know, listen, a terrible thing happened, but it was dealt with. Right. It was dealt with, and we don't need now to respond. You know, Shevet Binyamin took care of the people that did something wrong, and then that's fine. You know, we don't need to step in here if it was... But because it wasn't taken care of, and given Binyamin did not respond, and we'll see even once Klal Yisrael gathers together and meets and tries to decide what to do, given Binyamin find out about this, and they still ignore it. They still don't respond. Then everybody gets angry, and people say, listen, this, you know, we got to do something here. Okay? So we'll stop here for tonight, and next week we'll pick up with the real aftermath of this tragedy.